Case is number 05-1502, Nippon Steel and others against the United States. Ms. Cannon.
May it please the court. I'm Kathleen Cannon with Kelly Dry Collier Shannon, representing Allegheny Ludlum Corporation and AK Steel Corporation, domestic industry in this case. We ask you to determine that the Commission's affirmative determination on its second remand was supported by substantial evidence and should have been sustained. Although the Commission now stands in opposition to us in this appeal, there are a number of areas in which we appear to agree. We both agree that the Commission's second remand determination was supported by substantial evidence. We both agree that the lower court committed numerous errors in remanding that decision to the Commission. And finally, we agree that if the lower court had not erred, the Commission's affirmative second determination would have been sustained and should have been sustained, and therefore a negative determination on third remand would never have issued.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm going to try to find out from the Commission. I'm not sure that they agree that if it hadn't been for those errors, there shouldn't have been the negative determination. As I read the Commission's position, it is that while there are a lot of errors, they weren't enough to require or to justify the second negative determination.
They might take that position, Your Honor, although they've agreed with us straight down the line that every error of law and of fact we've identified is accurate.
Well, I will, when they get up, I'm going to ask them if they don't tell me exactly what their position is in this case.
Fair enough, Your Honor. But I would submit that to the extent that they do agree with us on the first two points, that the Commission's decision was supported by substantial evidence and was lawful, that there's no further justification to then state that irrespective of that agreement, the third remand determination, the negative decision, should have been sustained. Nothing in the case law before this court permits that type of a result.
And you're not challenging the evidentiary sufficiency underlying the third determination, are you?
We are not, Your Honor. We are only addressing the
second. The only question
remand.
We have to decide is whether the Court of International Trade properly rejected the second remand decision.
That is correct, Your Honor. Yes. And in that regard, I would refer you to the Nippon Steel Tin Mill case, which is at 458 F. 3rd, 1345. I find this case very similar to our sequence of events, and therefore very similar or very appropriate for this court to look at in terms of how it should analyze the scenario presented here. There you also had a second affirmative remand determination by the Commission. You had the lower court say it disagreed, it did not find it to be supported by substantial evidence, and remand it back. And as a result of that, there ended up being a negative decision on the third remand. And the court on appeal said, no, because the second remand determination was supported by substantial evidence, it should have been sustained, and it therefore vacated the lower court's decision, ordered the lower court to vacate that third remand and to reinstate the second remand determination. And that is the sequence of events that we see as appropriate here as well.
I think, though, the Tin Mill case is a little different in that there the outcome was dictated by a reversal. Here, the ITC reopened the record, right? And when they reopened the record with the identity of the different now ITC commissioners, the five rather than the six, they independently reached a different conclusion.
They did reach a different conclusion. However, Your Honor, the reopening of the record by their own admission is not what prompted that different result. The only thing that prompted that different result, as they admit, is a change in the composition of the commission. One commissioner left. So it wasn't anything about the errors identified by the lower court.
How can we be sure of that? May it not be that if you had, suppose that commissioner hadn't left, and so you had all six commissioners sitting, and it was remanded to the commission. We don't know what that commissioner who left would have done. You assume he would have voted the same way, but he might have said, well, in the light of two remands, I've rethought the case, and I now agree with the other three commissioners that the record calls for a different result. We don't know.
We don't know, Your Honor, that's true. But what we do know is that the commissioners that remained there all retained exactly the same vote and did not change their vote as a result of anything new that happened. So while it is correct that the commission was required to reopen the record, the reopening of the record. In fact, the commissioners that had voted affirmatively found new information in the additional record evidence that was gathered
Was any additional evidence introduced on the third remand?
Yes, Your Honor, there was. They reopened the record and they collected some additional evidence. But the additional evidence, as I said, was not critical to the ultimate determination. It did not change anybody's view at all from where they had been. I think the critical point, though, is not so much what happened on third remand, but if you're following the sequence of remands and you determine that the second remand determination was supported by substantial evidence, you never get to a third remand. There was no reason to get there. And that's the critical analysis here. That's the way that this court has analyzed this type of events in the Tin Mill case, irrespective of whether the court said there was error or not. What's important is that the court here found that the commission's decision was not supported by substantial evidence, and that was the critical holding in the Tin Mill case as well. This court expressly stated it was not rejecting the lower court's decision in Tin Mill because it had reversed. It expressly stated its holding was premised on a finding that the commission's decision was supported by substantial evidence. And that's exactly the facts presented here. So the reversal was not critical to this court's decision. It was the fact that the standard of review that's applied here, the substantial evidence standard, should have resulted in sustaining that decision. And the real problem, Your Honor, with the lower court's decision is that it did not properly apply the standard of review. The standard of review has been articulated in many cases by this court. It is a highly deferential standard. It basically states, one important part of it is that the possibility of drawing two inconsistent conclusions from the same record evidence doesn't mean that either of those conclusions is not supported by substantial evidence. And that's precisely what you had here. Over the course of this litigation, which has lasted many years, we've had 8 commissioners render decisions. 4 of those commissioners have rendered affirmative decisions, and 4 have rendered negative decisions because of their weighing of the evidence. They've looked at the evidence, and 4 have found it supports an affirmative decision, and 4 have found it supports a negative decision. That is precisely what the commission is supposed to do, but that is not what the lower court is supposed to do. The lower court is supposed to review it to see whether those decisions are reasonable. And here, the lower court did not do that. Instead, it pointed first to the decisions of the dissenting commissioners as allegedly evidence that the affirmative commission finding was not supported by substantial evidence. And it said they had found that the affirmative decision was not supported. That is not true at all. The dissenting commissioners only reached a different result weighing the exact same record evidence. They didn't say one word about an error in the affirmative a decision of the commissioners.
Counsel, would you dispute that there is substantial evidence to support either the second remand or the third remand? Because when I read it, it seems like there was substantial evidence to support either one, and the question was, which one is it that we're really supposed to be reviewing and focusing on? Is that right?
We have not addressed the third remand at all, and I'm not disputing whether or not there is substantial evidence to support it, but your point is well taken. Both of those decisions could be supported by substantial evidence, and I think the question is, which one do you review? And that's where the commission says, don't review the second one, even though we believe it was supported by substantial evidence, because we are now embracing the third remand determination. And my response is, there's no law that allows you to do that. If the lower court erred and there never should have been a third remand determination, then simply because it is, what, the most recent decision, it doesn't allow you to get there. The jurisdiction of this court allows us, as the domestic industry, to challenge the interlocutory remand determinations of the lower court, this intermediate decision, only when that whole case is final.
So you never couldn't challenge it. Yeah, you couldn't have, after the second remand, when they sent it back, you couldn't have come here.
I could not have come here. That is correct, Your Honor.
There's no opportunity.
I had no opportunity to do that. I had to wait until a final decision was reached. Now a final decision has been reached, and now under the line of cases we've cited, Coastal Raritan, Taiwan Semiconductors, Altex, now is the time that I can finally come to challenge why I believe the court should not have remanded that case and why I believe the second remand determination should have been sustained. And if you were to accept the commission's position, which is even if we were right originally and even if the lower court was wrong, we still want to adopt the last decision, then you basically nullify my ability to do that. And that is not consistent with the line of cases that recognizes that this is the time that I have to come to challenge. So that's the position that we take as to why we have to be able to legally challenge that decision at this time. And the cases that they cite on Tung Mung or Alt X are not to the contrary. The Tung Mung case that they rely on, for example, is a very unique factual situation, which they concede, where the agency independently changed its policy. And as a result of that policy change, that was the only reason that the court decided to look at the new decision. But this court in Alt X expressly distinguished that case in a situation very much like what you see here, where you had a commission affirmative, negative decision there replaced by an affirmative decision, and the appellant was trying to challenge that decision and cited to this Tung Mung case, and the court said this is not like Tung Mung because this was not an independent policy change. A simple change in the outcome by the commission is not the same as Tung Mung. So I think that it's very important that the sequence of events be observed here and the nature of the court remand be observed, which was a finding of unsupported by substantial evidence and not a remand for further explanation or clarification, which would put it in another standard of review. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Yes, we'll save your rebuttal
time. I'll save that.
Thank you. We'll hear from the other side.
Thank you.
Ms. Rothrock.
May it please the Court, I'm Grace Mary Rothrothy here on behalf of the United States International Trade Commission. In their briefs, and again this afternoon, defendant appellants have attempted to shift focus away from the Commission's third negative remand determination.
But there is no challenge here to the third negative remand decision, as far as I understand it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, tell me exactly what is the Commission's position on the only issue that your opponents raise, which is that the Court of International Trade should not have set aside the Commission's second decision?
Well, Your Honor, the Commission's position is that although the Court did err in remanding back to the Commission...
You say they did... You concede that they erred in sending it back to the Commission.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, and if they erred in sending it back to the Commission, that means what they should have done was to have affirmed the Commission's second decision. Is that correct?
We believe that the second remand determination was supported by substantial evidence and should have been affirmed. However, that
if it should have been affirmed, why did they ever get to the question of whether the third decision is supported by evidence? Isn't that enough to say the Commission should not have been required to make the third remand decision because sending it back for the third remand decision was an error, as you said?
Yes, Your Honor, it's an error, but also it did come back to the Commission, and the Commission once again reweighed the evidence and came to the negative outcome. It basically represents its final determination.
Well, they didn't come to a different outcome. They had a diminished commission. Let me ask you a question about that. As I recall from the briefs, there was a relatively short gap between the departure of the sixth commissioner, I forget her name, and the arrival of the replacement. Isn't that right? Just a few weeks?
Yes, that's correct.
And I tell you, I find it really troublesome that, in the first place, I guess there is the more usual system where an outgoing commissioner continues to serve until the replacement actually arrives physically. I gather that that didn't happen here, that there was a period where the sixth seat was unoccupied. Is that right?
Basically, the one commissioner left prior to the vote taking place. However, the statute already addresses such a scenario and allows that a majority of
the statute allows it.
Yes.
But this is... Here we have something that's been bouncing back and forth for a number of years. The stakes are not small. And in this period, after the first commissioner goes, before the replacement comes, appointed by the same political party, so that although one realizes the commissioners are independent, at the same time, the entire structure is designed to reflect policy as well, is it not? So we have the six commissioners, that's why we have six instead of an odd number. And in this gap, the majority then, now for the side that had been on the short end up till now, moves out the decision. I would think, to me, I find that extremely troublesome. The successor has already been identified, apparently gone through all the procedures of the appointment, is turning up in the ensuing week. I think there was just a week.
That's correct.
And the opinion comes out now. Nobody's changed their vote. It's just that now there are five commissioners instead of six, so it goes the other way.
Well, Your
Honor, is there a justification for moving it out suspiciously speedily?
No, Your Honor. The commission didn't speed it up. It was basically the court ordered us to issue our remand determination by a
It was the commission that made the decision, is it not? Nobody said you issue this opinion today or else?
The court ordered us to issue the remand determination by a certain date. Yes, it did, Your Honor. And
there
it just happened that the Commissioner Miller left at the time that she did. The date wasn't set.
But the commission didn't go back to the court and say, because of a peculiar situation, that one of our commissioners has left, but we have a replacement coming in. We'd like to have the time for responding extended so that all six commissioners could serve. It didn't do that, did it?
No, Your Honor, and it doesn't have to under the commission's statute. The commission's statute specifically states that for a valid commission action, only a majority of the quorum of the sitting commissions is necessary for a valid determination. In fact, that is the holding in the Voss case.
But the statute also says, if I recall correctly, that an outgoing commissioner, even though the term has expired, the appointment term has expired, can continue to act until the successor is in place.
That's right, Your Honor.
And that didn't happen here.
Commissioner Miller chose not to, and I believe that is also the holding of the Voss case, which basically indicates that individual commissioners up to their discretion whether or not to participate. And the Voss case is by the predecessor court to this court.
Well, this all results from the peculiarity that the commission, unlike most government regulatory agencies, has an even rather than an odd number of members. Most regulatory commissions have an Securities and Exchange Commission and the National Labor Relations Board. They have five commissioners. So in the normal course of events, you're not going to have an equal division unless one commissioner recuses herself. But here you've got three and three, and it's not unusual. I remember I sat in one case in which there were four commissioners who recused, and by a vote of 1-1, they adopted something. And since it was even, that was an affirmance. But, let me ask you another question. We don't know, do we, how the commission would vote if this case were today, if this case were to be remanded again to it. We don't know whether they vote negatively or affirmatively.
That's correct, Your Honor. But again, I must say that the Congress already took this into account. That's the reasons for the provision where the majority of the quorum of the sitting commissions basically constitute a valid action. In fact, your predecessor court has already addressed this issue in the Voss case, where basically in a remand situation, where it came back and not all sitting commissioners did participate, that it, in fact, that the remand decision constituted a valid commission determination. So I believe it's already basically that the third remand determination is a valid determination.
Well, why isn't this kind of like our decision in Altex, or I'm not sure if I'm saying that name right, Altex, where they said that a change in the voting commissioners did not amount to an independent policy change by the commission and allowed a review of the intermediate decision in the case. I think it was the second one in that case, because it wasn't a change in the policy, it was just a change in the commissioners.
Well, Your Honor, you also have to remember the posture of that case. What was being argued that was the interim remand decision be reinstated, and that's one that they were saying, looking to see whether or not the Tong Meng case would be applicable. In that situation, the majority that voted in the second remand determination, one of them was a new commissioner that came aboard, And it was quite possible, it couldn't necessarily, as self-evident as it here, that it was independent of any errors by the court, because another commissioner came and basically that majority adopted the dissent of the prior determination, the first determination. Basically, yes, Altex wasn't a policy change, and basically the third remand determination here is not a policy change. However, the commission should be able to have its ability to change its mind, so to speak, on remand, because it is, as this court has held, the ultimate determination of, basically determines material injury.
But nobody changed their mind, did they?
No, Your Honor.
No. Okay.
I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Let's see. I think six, I guess, Reggie. We've used up some of Mr. Gertie's time.
Six.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Greg Gertis of Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, and I'm here on behalf of the Japanese producers, Nippon Steel and JFE Steel. I'd like to begin my presentation today by briefly addressing the issue of whether, in our view, the second or the third remand determination should be viewed as controlling. At base, we agree with the outcome advocated by the ITC, that is, that the third remand determination is a controlling determination, but we disagree as to how to get to this result. As we understand it, the ITC's position is that there exist two valid determinations, the second and the third, and by contrast, our position is that there exists only one valid determination, the third. I think we're the lone party here defending Judge Eaton's decision that the second remand determination was not in fact supported by substantial evidence. We would ask that this court hold the same. That kind of leads me then to the main issue of why we believe the second remand determination was not adequately supported. As this court is aware, there are two major aspects of the second determination that are in dispute. The ITC's volume analysis and the ITC's analysis of the likely impact of subject imports following revocation. In my presentation today, I would like to focus on the second issue, the impact determination, and what we believe are certain key problems with the Commission's analysis. The first problem involves the ITC's failure to satisfy the basic requirements of Section 1675A84. Pursuant to this provision, the ITC is required, as part of its impact analysis, to evaluate several specific economic factors, including the effect of revocation on the domestic industry's likely output, sales levels, market share, and profitability. In the second remand determination, the ITC stated that the domestic industry's performance with respect to these factors would be adversely impacted by subject imports following revocation. As Judge Eaton correctly recognized, however, the ITC identified virtually no specific evidence in support of this conclusion. That is to say, the ITC's analysis was based on speculation and not facts. Indeed, not only did the Commission not identify any record evidence with respect to these factors, but it effectively admitted to Judge Eaton that it could not do so based on the existing record. By itself, we believe that this failure by the ITC was a sufficient basis for further remand. On its face, the statute is clear. The ITC must consider economic factors such as likely changes in production, sales, and profitability as part of its impact determination. As Judge Eaton recognized, the ITC did not carry out this task.
Well, but there was evidence. You're just saying it wasn't sufficient, it wasn't substantial.
Well, I would actually, the ITC put out some conclusions, but it really didn't even identify any evidence in support of those conclusions. Is there substantial evidence? I would say Judge Eaton didn't even have a basis to determine that. Now, he said that it was not supported by substantial evidence, which was fair, because in his first remand, he said, well, you've given me some conclusions here, point me to the evidence.
No, you said ITC, but you're talking about the court.
Oh,
didn't
I'm sorry.
Have the evidence. You meant the CIT.
Well, let's go back to the first remand determination. The ITC in its impact analysis.
No, we're talking about the second. You're saying the second can't stand.
Oh, I believe the second can't stand, but by way of background, in the first, the ITC.
Well, they collected more data between the first and the second, so we're just talking about the second.
There was no further data collected between the first and the second.
Or presented to the court.
The court asked that the ITC said, well, you've given me some conclusions, but you haven't given me any evidence. So in the second remand determination, the commission came back and said, well, we've tried to the extent possible, but they said, given the nature of this review, we really can't give you a whole lot of evidence with respect to these specific statutory factors. I would add that that was proven to be incorrect because following the second remand, the ITC did open up the record, obtained a lot of information on point with respect to those statutory factors, and that evidence was cited by the new commission majority in the third remand. So I think the basic issue, as far as we see it, is that the commission, it had a conclusion with respect to the factors in the statute, but it didn't cite any evidence. And I think this is particularly important because you have a lot of contrary evidence, which indicates that even assuming, and only assuming, that you had significant volume and price effects, it's not a foregone conclusion in this case that the domestic industry would be injured.
Counsel, so when the ITC said they find that the subject imports caused lower sales, production, capacity utilization, employment, and profitability for the domestic producers, there's no evidence to support those findings?
I don't believe so, no. Or at a minimum, the commission didn't identify that evidence, even though Judge Eaton had previously asked them to.
But that's a different thing, whether there's evidence in the record or whether the commission supported it, cited it. The commission might not have cited any evidence, but there might have been adequate evidence in the record.
There might be, and we would take the position that there is not, but at the end of the day, we don't know because the commission didn't identify that evidence. It didn't say, well, here's the steps by which we get to our conclusion. It has to identify substantial evidence to get there. It just put out the conclusions.
But when we review for substantial evidence, I mean, aren't we supposed to look at the record as a whole and determine whether there's substantial evidence? We're not even just bound to look at the specific things that the ITC or the CIT cited with regard to the issue, right? Isn't our standard of review to look at the record as a whole
to determine
substantial evidence? So whether the ITC cited it or not is irrelevant if it's in the record somewhere.
I wouldn't say it because, I mean, this is kind of, these are such general concepts. Well, we'd find that they have reduced profitability, or we'd find that they have reduced capacity utilization. These are kind of broad things. How do they get there? I mean, ultimately, it's the ITC that must be the decision maker.
I suppose you would say that the commission didn't cite the evidence because there wasn't any.
That's our basic position. You're correct, Your Honor. And even assuming there were, and we would disagree with that, the ITC didn't give its answer.
Well, that makes, but the, if there were, then it seems to me it becomes difficult to justify what the court did in saying there wasn't.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because that would call upon the court to basically try to itself assemble, well, maybe this fact supports, but I don't know, there's some contrary evidence here. The district court, the trial court, would have been the fact finder at that point, I believe, without the ITC identifying the specific facts that led to its determination. Again, particularly here, where you have a lot of contrary record evidence, we believe overwhelming contrary record evidence.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gerdes.
Thank you.
Ms. Cannon.
Your Honor, if I might just go to the point Mr. Gerdes was making on the evidence on likely impact. There is ample evidence, not only in the record as a whole, but specifically set forth in the Commission's decision on this point. I would refer you to the record, the appendix at page 630 to 631 in particular, where they find, number one, reports by U.S. purchasers and importers that U.S. customers would seek lower priced imports from Japan and Italy if revocation occurred, which would lead them to lose sales as well as market share. That's a specific finding. Number two, evidence of the need for U.S. producers to operate at high capacity utilization rates in this capital intensive industry in order to recoup investments and to earn profits, and their inability to do so if the imports resumed and increased in volume as they had pre-order.
But counsel, I don't think that he's arguing, and maybe I'm going to misinterpret it, but I don't think he's arguing that the ITC said these things. I think he's arguing there wasn't evidence to support these findings.
I understood him to say that the ITC didn't really cite to anything except some general statements that the profits might go down, or we wouldn't be able to invest, or we wouldn't be able to recoup our investments. And my point is there is very specific evidence and findings by the Commission on those points in the record to the extent that that was his argument. Otherwise, there is ample evidence in the record beyond that cited by the Commission that refers to all kinds of things, including testimony by the domestic producers at the hearing. We had executives from both Allegheny Ludlum and AK Steel testify as to all kinds of adverse effects they would suffer if revocation occurred. There were confidential details in their questionnaire responses. There's ample evidence on this, Your Honor, both cited and not referenced by the Commission. And the other factor that I was going to mention was the cost-price squeeze that was going to lead to the profit decline, which was discussed in detail by the Commission and has ample record support as well. The only other point I would make is that I believe where we started, the question was asked whether the Commission agreed that the lower court should have affirmed the second remand determination, and I understood Commission counsel to say that they did agree that that decision should have been affirmed, and I submit that that basically leads this court to the conclusion, I believe, that the Commission also agrees that decision should have been sustained, and you should never, there never should have been a third remand, and there's no reason to sustain a negative remand that never should have issued. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The case is not under submission, but before you leave, I have a question for all counsel. I noticed that in the pages, everything is marked, every page is marked confidential. For in some of the briefs, some subject matter is within brackets, some very specific subject matter, and I assume that that's intended to be confidential. However, there's page after page which just says confidential at the top with nothing in brackets. Are we to assume that unless it's bracketed, and just in trying to write an opinion, that we know what's restrained? If there's any question in the minds of any of you as to what you really feel needs to be protected, will you tell us, write us a letter? Other than that, we will assume that what is in the double brackets is what you're really concerned about, and that we just don't have to worry about the rest of it. So take a look at your briefs and at the appendix, whatever we have, to make sure that you're comfortable with that. Okay, thank you. Case is taken under submission.